Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, welcome to Nature Now. This is Mary Robson in the depths of winter, though on a sunny day we get some spring, but it's cold, even on those sunny days. Today we'll talk with Gary Bullock, who is a frequent guest to our show, and a mystery sound often starts the show. This is a loud woodpecker. And we're going to identify it. It is a pileated, and that is to appreciate and introduce our woodpecker show. So you don't have to be guessing. It's a pileated, and this is an unforgettable bird once you have seen it. Gary Bullock served as a retired firefighter and fire chief in Alaska for 35 years before moving to the Olympic Peninsula. Here he leads tours, writes, thinks, and paints birds, and he has vivid observational skills that go along with being an artist. So we'll start with a few birds seen in these last weeks. These are things you have found in your wanderings, Gary. And if these birds are unusual, let us know that.
Well, first of all, in the Sequim area, we have a lesser black-backed gull. And this is the second winter that we think the same bird has been frequenting the area. They're usually an eastern bird, but a lot of people have got to see it here in Sequim. There's been a brambling in Port Angeles, which is a type of finch, Eurasian finch, and many people have got a chance to see that. They're a beautiful bird. A big flock of gray-crowned rosy finches up at Hurricane Ridge. They're not unusual, but a big flock is unusual. They're an alpine bird that only usually seen up in the mountains. So that's pretty cool that they've been seen up there.
And people have been going all the way to Hurricane Ridge to look for them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Birders are like that. They'll do that. In Jefferson County, there's been sightings of a red-shouldered hawk in Discovery Bay in the Snow Creek area, and that's pretty unusual. They're another further east, further south bird that isn't always here, but sometimes they winter on the California and Oregon coast. So those are the special birds that have been seen lately.
Well, when we say, or you say, that it is an eastern bird, you're generally thinking of east of the mountains, right?
East of the mountain and more of an East Coast bird, Central Eastern North America.
Wow. They're not just lost. They're actually becoming more regular here.
Well, they may be lost. They may have problems with their magnetic field or how they interpret the Earth's magnetic field. Just might be imprinted backwards, but we get birds showing up where they aren't usually all the time.
I am happy to find out that I too might have something wrong with my magnetic field, and that could cause difficulties. So you also said that there was a large flight of ancient murrelets, and I gather that they're not endangered because I checked, but they're part of a very interesting group of birds that also includes auks, yes?
Correct. They're like a puffin penguin-like bird that's much smaller than most penguins, but puffin size or football size. And there's just been large passings of them by Point Wilson that have been noticed. And it's good to see them in large numbers.
Well, I think at this point in the world, it's wonderful to see any bird in large numbers, but certainly ancient murrelets would be something we can celebrate. And you also mentioned that mating season, it's a little early, but you're hearing some great-horned?
Great-horned owls are starting to hoot at night and call and establish their territories. And they'll be breeding and nesting real soon. And the reason they nest so early is so that they can be ready for feeding their young ones when all the squirrels and rabbits and rodents have their spring litters.
For heaven's sake, a preconception by the great horned owls. They say, okay, let's be ready for that. I seldom hear the great horned. I've seen one in the trees near my house, but I have never heard one. I hear the barred owls, which I am not at this moment hearing. So it's a little early for them. Okay, let's leap into our major topic today, which is woodpeckers. And we have about 5 common species in the Clallam Jefferson area. And I have to say, I was talking with a friend in New York State this morning, and I said, well, I'm going to be talking about woodpeckers. And she started describing the woodpecker that she sees from her house was nothing like any one of these 5 common species here. So they're scattered all over the U.S. and other places. So let's start with the first of the most common species.
Okay. Downy woodpecker would be the first one that we would see here. And they prefer deciduous trees. They're the smallest woodpecker in North America. They're only about 6¾ inches long. You might not even notice them. They're kind of quiet, diminutive in the trees. They have a white stripe down the center of their back, and males have a red patch on the back of their head. And when you look at a downy woodpecker, their beak is quite small relative to their overall size and their head size.
So does that indicate that they are not going to need to use their beak to bash a tree and get some sap or some insects, or is it just a matter of the size of the bird?
It's the size of the bird and the way that their beak has evolved and the type of food that they look for in the bark. And they just have a relatively small beak compared to the other woodpeckers.
Is that their the characteristic that you would use if you were trying to distinguish them between, say, between a downy and a hairy? Would it be the length of the beak that you would notice?
That's probably the best definitive thing to look for, because a hairy woodpecker's beak is quite long compared to its head size. And sometimes it's hard looking up in a tree to tell how large a woodpecker actually is. But if you look at the beak and the beak looks really small, it's probably a downy.
The downy is the only one that I regularly see at a suet feeder that I have up. It would be nice if I could get all 5 of these here, but that hasn't happened. So while we're thinking about woodpeckers in general, I have wondered, looking at one which is on a tree, how come they don't just fall off the tree, or what keeps them steady when they're drumming so hard?
Most woodpeckers have 4 toes, and 3 of them are generally pointed front ways and 1 points towards the back. And they will normally position that 3rd toe facing back or sideways also, which gives them a good 4-point crampon grip on the tree. Wow. And they all have a very stiff tail feathers, and they lean back on those tail feathers and they support them while they're beating on the tree or drumming.
That is a very good image to think about, because if we didn't know that they had both the feet and the tail to balance themselves, it looks as if they would just simply flitter off the tree. So they balance when they're drumming, and all of them have stout bills, right?
Yes, they have stout bills that are designed for drilling and making holes and chipping off bark, and that's how they feed. If they didn't have a stout bill, they would probably starve to death.
Oh dear. Sometimes, maybe this is truer more of sapsuckers, but some of them will drum on the side of your house or a metal pole. Any reason, or are they just showing off?
A lot of their drumming is territorial, establishing a territory. And if they find some nice cedar siding on your house that makes a good sound, they will drum on that. If they find some flashing, metal flashing up on your roof that they like the sound of. They'll drum on that. But normally they drum on things that are wood. And sometimes they're quite destructive on house siding, cedar siding. They drill a lot of holes into it as if they're looking for insects. And that can be real frustrating for homeowners.
We want the shingles to stay intact. Since we're talking about the general characteristics of woodpeckers, do they use feeders generally?
Pretty much all five species that we have in our area will use their feeders. We'll use your feeders, mostly suet feeders. They will take some sunflower seed and other seeds, peanut butter. And the red-breasted sapsucker may also get nectar from a nectar feeder, a hummingbird feeder, if it can land on it and get to the nectar well.
That's a little hard to imagine, but I will take your word for it. If they can land, they can possibly get a chance to get some of the hummingbird nectar. I've also thought, just listening to you, that peanut butter may be the universal food substance for both humans and a lot of animals. So, okay, let's talk again about the specific birds. And you had given some numbers of which ones were counted in the Christmas bird count in December. It's kind of interesting to see the balance between something that's present in a lot of numbers and something that you just seldom see. So we were talking about the hairy woodpecker. I do not remember seeing one. I may have just missed it, but what is its major characteristic? We're saying, okay, we want to distinguish this from another woodpecker.
It looks a lot like a downy. Downy and hairies look quite a bit alike. They're black and white overall, checkered on their bodies and breasts. Their backs are pretty much dark with a white stripe down the back. But the hairy woodpecker has a beak that is just about as long as its head is front to back.
Wow.
And it looks like an extremely large beak compared to the head size.
Okay.
So how you can tell them apart.
Okay. And they are closely related to the downies, but certainly distinguished by that amazing beak length.
They both look quite a bit alike, except for beak size, but they are not, through DNA analysis, they are not closely related.
Interesting. Relatively speaking, I'm looking at your list of what was seen in the squib area. There were almost twice as many downies as hairies observed in the Christmas count.
Yes, I think that's because of feeders mainly. You know, they're being seen at feeders, and they are more frequent to feeders than the hairies.
Okay.
In Jefferson County, they had the same number of downies and hairies seen on the Christmas count. So, okay. Squim, there might have just been more feeders or more feeder observers that were watching.
Sure. And going on, we were talking a little bit about things that might make a hole in your siding. The red-breasted sapsucker, for some reason, I have not thought of those as being woodpeckers, but they are.
They're just a different species and a little bit different, but there's several types of sapsuckers, and this is the one that's common here.
The one called the red-breasted sapsucker.
The red-breasted sapsucker.
Okay.
And the reason they're called sapsuckers is they have a habit of drilling a row of holes in the bark of a lot of times fruit trees or alder, aspen, willow trees, and cedar trees, and they call them sap wells. And they'll drill these lines of holes in the bark that only go in, oh, a quarter inch or so. And then they'll come back to feed on the sap that comes out of the holes.
Uh-huh. So that sap is limited because it will probably close up the hole after a while. So they'd have to keep making new holes.
Yes, and they do keep making new holes. You'll see old apple trees a lot of times that just have rows and rows and rows of these holes. They're about a quarter inch in diameter and maybe an eighth or a quarter inch deep, and they scar over, but they come back and feed on them. And in addition to that, hummingbirds will come and feed at the sap wells.
Interesting. So that is both rufous and Anna hummingbirds, our common ones here, will take advantage of a sapsucker well. Wow. And do these holes generally leave a tree growing all right? I noticed there are a lot of deciduous trees that they go after, and that may be because the bark is easy to access. I'm not sure. But do the wells ever damage a tree?
They could damage the tree, especially if it's a young tree that has a whole bunch of holes in it or a whole bunch of woodpeckers coming to it. But most of the time, the sapsuckers aren't abundant enough or coming and drilling holes enough that they damage a tree.
Aha. So they're not concentrated generally. And I noticed, again, looking at the numbers of birds observed, that the red-breasted sapsucker was observed 12 times in Sequim and only once in the Jefferson County area, probably due to the fact that they're not as present, or is this not their season?
Well, they're less visible this time of the year. They're still around, but they're a little more reclusive. Uh-huh. And they're never as common as downy and hairy woodpeckers. One thing I forgot to mention about the sapwells is the sapwells also attract insects, which come to feed on the sap, bees and gnats and mosquitoes and whatever. And the hummingbirds and the sapsuckers will feed on those insects also. It's a good source of protein for them.
Sort of protein wrapped in a little dessert.
Yes, sugar-coated.
Okay. So one woodpecker that is completely memorable is the pileated. And I am remembering a guest I had when I first moved out here. We were having breakfast and he and his wife were looking out at a tree and there was a pileated woodpecker, bang, 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 banging on it. And he said, whoa, that's a heck of a way to start the day, banging your head on a tree. But the pileated is one that has some really wonderful characteristics.
Pileateds are the largest extant woodpecker in North America. We used to have a woodpecker that was even larger called the ivory-billed, but they are now considered extinct. And pileated can also be pronounced pileated, depending on where you are. But pileated is the most common pronunciation, I think. They have a crest or a cap that looks like a woody woodpecker crest. It's bright red. And they've got a large beak, overall black body with large white areas under the wing. When they fly, they almost look like a crow. They're crow-sized, but they have this white patches underneath their wings. And so that's how you can identify them.
They're really extraordinary. Someone said that they could have been the model for Woody Woodpecker.
I think they probably were.
And when they make a hole, it's not round. That's the odd thing. I've seen these holes and you look at them and you go, who did that?
They usually make a more rectangular hole. It can be the size of a 3x5 card or even a brick or larger. And sometimes there'll be, especially in a dead tree that's rotting, there'll be multiple holes. And they do some serious excavations in dead trees to get at grubs and ants and larvae. And wow. They can really make the chips fly. The fifth species that we have in the area here is the northern flicker. It's probably the most common species that we have. We have both red-shafted and yellow-shafted versions. They're the same species, just different colorations, and that's the color of the feathers underneath their wings and tail. They normally hybridize between them. They're all the same species. Flickers, more than any of the other woodpeckers, feed on the ground. They go after grubs and worms and ants, and they will also eat fruits and berries in season and come to feeders for suet.
But they generally depend on the ants that they find in the ground.
Yes, and earthworms. They eat a lot of earthworms, too.
Okay. That is another argument for keeping any sort of pesticide out of your ground, because you're protecting all of the food that many of these birds use. So, and they are common when they're surveyed around here, then.
Yes, in fact, they're even more common than the Downies and Hairies.
Okay, great. And I think one of the things we really wanted to be sure we had time for is to talk a little bit about the woodpecker brain. I know that they're bang, 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 banging, but people have had various theories about how the woodpecker manages that.
Up until recently, it was thought that they had a spongy, bony structure in their skull that protected their brain like a shock-absorbing football helmet. And there was also thoughts woodpecker tongues are extremely long, and the tongue attachment and base wraps all the way around the back of the skull. It was theorized that this acted like a seatbelt on the brain to kind of hold it in place. But just in July of 2022, in current biology, they've determined that what really protects a woodpecker's brain from the concussion of all the pounding is physics. A woodpecker brain is 700 times smaller than a human brain. And as such, the impact of them hitting their beak on a tree or hard object doesn't affect the brain like it would a human brain.
Huh. So they are, as many things in biology are, they are protected by their, essentially, the way they're built.
Yes, and the size of their brain. And you can kind of have a comparison. Wood ducks nest in trees. They might be 30 or 40 feet up. And when it comes time for the wood ducks to leave the nest cavity, they jump out of the nest hole and all the way down to the ground. And 99% of the time, that 40-foot fall doesn't hurt them. And the same with an ant or a caterpillar on your picnic table, on your deck. If it crawls off the edge and falls to the deck, which is, you know, 40, 50 times the size or height of the insect, it doesn't affect them, and it's because of physics.
Wow. Gary, I am always so happy to get a chance to talk with you. We will do it again. And you mentioned a good place for people to look for more information.
Yeah, Cornell Laboratory. Yeah, allaboutbirds.org. It's the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology. And they have species accounts and information on all the birds that we're talking about here, and all the birds in North America.
It's a wonderful site. Thank you so much for coming today. I appreciate it. For those of you who may be interested and curious about the natural world around us, do you like talking with people? Can you get excited about helping others appreciate the wonders of nature? Think about joining the Nature Now team. You can contact us at naturenow@kptz.org. Thanks to all of you for joining us on Nature Now. Particular thanks to Gary Bullock and Nora Petrick, who made this show happen. Our music today is the Andrews Sisters and Danny Kaye from 1940. It's the Woody Woodpecker song, and you will not hear it anywhere else today. So listen to Nature Now on podcasts. That's a good way to keep up with our shows, because we have done more than 600. Thanks and happy trails.
That's the Woody Woodpecker song. He's a pecking it all day long. He pecks a few holes in a tree to see if a redwood's really red.
And it's nothing to him on the tiniest whim to peck a few holes in your head.
That's the Woody Woodpecker's tune. Makes the other woodpeckers swoon, though it doesn't make sense to the dull and the dense or the lady woodpeckers long for. That's the Woody Woodpecker song.
That's the Woody Woodpecker song.
I look at the hoo hoo.
He's a pecking it all day long.
He pecks a few holes in a tree to see if a redwood's really red. And it's nothing to him on the tiniest whim to peck holes in your head.
That's the Woody Woodpecker tune. Makes the other woodpecker swoon.
Though it doesn't make sense to the doll and the dance, all the lady woodpeckers long for. That's the Woody Woodpecker song. Oh,